We're joined on the Joy of Retail podcast today by Lee Timms, the co-founder and brand director of P&Co, and he's joined by his fellow co-founder, Jordan Brooks, the CEO. Their brand lives by a conscious mindset, not just when it comes to creating quality clothing and goods, but they strive for quality in everything they do. Hailing from Birmingham's creative heartbeat in the Jewellery Quarter, the brand has been built in a place synonymous with quality. Working closely with factories across the globe, they continually push themselves to create the best clothing as sustainably as they can. Award-winning Drapers Nonetheless Online Retailer of the Year, boasting a strong online community, the envy of many aspiring fashion brands, their products can be seen throughout popular culture from the likes of Stereophonics, Killian Murphy and Sam Fender.
In this episode, we're talking to them about consistency of message and understanding the customer, sharing secret ingredients to success and what not to do, how it feels to see big celebs wearing the brand, and how they're still learning 10 years on. They're back in the studio following on from their renowned tattoo tour and celebrating 10 years in business. We're really excited for you to hear the conversation, so let's get going.
Hi guys, great to have you here. So as always, we start off with the same question in each of our episodes. How do you find the joy in retail?
I think for us, it's being able to reach a global community online, which can be quite impersonal sometimes, but you know, it's amazing to be able to reach that many people and for them to be able to experience what you've worked so hard on for such a long time.
I think that's it. I think there is definitely two sides of the coin for us. There's obviously, like Jordan says, reaching so many people globally on a daily basis, but the other side of the coin being whether we can do events or show in the brand, you know, at trade shows and things like that, we can actually meet and greet our customers and really get to know them. Me and Jordan will be faces on the stand at those kind of things, and we still are to this day. We love doing that and love connecting with our customers and hearing what they've got to say about the brand.
I know a little bit about your guys' history, and I know you've had a store. Is there any plans for doing more to be in front of the customers? You just mentioned there, like, trade shows, but yeah, how do you feel you best talk to the customers going forward into 2023 and beyond?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's definitely something that we're going to progress more in next year. So be at more events, be where the customers are, be where the community is, but also probably some retail pop-ups here and there, so we can really sort of get across the brand DNA in our own space, and people can really experience what P&Co is. So I think there'll be quite a few opportunities next year to connect with the customer a bit more and get feedback and have an opportunity to have a beer with them and stuff.
I think that's it. We'd recently just finished our tattoo tour, if you guys have seen that. And we finished that at a really cool sort of local bike place where we'd got bike, beers, food, and obviously tattoos on the day, flashy tattoos. I think doing those kind of events really connect the customer. Obviously, we can portray the brand online, but when we can put all those things together in a real physical place, we can really concentrate the brand message, I think, a lot stronger than what we can do online.
So events are going to take precedent over like a physical retail space then, do you think?
I think because there's more frequency there, there's more opportunity to connect with people within the communities that they enjoy to be a part of. And hopefully we can connect some of our customers from different lifestyles as well. That'd be awesome. But I think definitely we'd still like to have a retail space at some point for a length of time.
Yeah, so you've obviously had a history a few years back with having your first taste of retail. It's been a bit of a gap since that one to this current appetite for retail. Why the gap? What were some of the lessons that you learned from the first time around? It'd be interesting for our listeners, I think, just to get your take on what your first foray into retail felt like, good and bad.
I'd say the first lesson was don't try and run the e-com business and run the store at the same time. We were literally manning the store daily, so we'd be probably each taking it in turns behind the till whilst trying to do your sort of regular day job and place orders and you know, customer queries and all that stuff, and try and sort of help customers in a shop as well. So I think for us, it's just been a bit of we just needed a bit of growth in between, really, a bit of team growth as well, and some range building. So whilst we filled the shop that we had a few years back with really, really nice stuff, we probably didn't really have like a core P&Co range that needed to be there to really sit well in a retail space, which which has been the focus for us for the last couple of years, really, and it's been building out really well. So I think it'd be exciting when we get a next opportunity to be in a shop and showcase the P&Co range and quality that we've been working so hard on.
George, you clearly find joy in the range. You just mentioned the range a few times then.
Did I say?
So, no, but that's good. You can see you're passionate about it.
I think we are product people at heart, aren't we, Lee? Lee's obviously the creative here, but we both love product. We both love creating, things for the customer. So I think the real joy in retail for us is, working with the team on a piece, a range, a campaign, whatever it is, and then seeing that launch and seeing that reaction and getting that feedback. Yeah, that's where it is for us.
Definitely. I think there is, to touch on that, there is sort of regular sort of sections and tasters of that joy moment, whether it is design the range and we're all looking around the room like going, this is great, this is a strong range. So then samples coming in, again, it sort of levels up and you're like, God, these have come back amazing. These are going to do really well. And then, to obviously launch it online and get that instant feedback and see sales coming through, I think that's the strongest hit you get, really.
Yeah, definitely.
What else gives you joy then? So is there any of the stories you can share with us that bring you joy?
I think the crafted range was a bit of a highlight for us over the last couple of years. So we started out as a graphic t-shirt brand and we've never sort of created a t-shirt without a big print or embroidery or something like that on it. So we set out to create a really high quality, crafted t-shirt without a print. And it was quite a challenge for us to see how we could pull that together and market it well and for the customers to connect to it. So whilst we always really focused on quality with all of our t-shirts throughout the whole P&Co journey, I think there was an element of, people really buy into the graphic or the slogan that you've put on the t-shirt. So having to flip that on its head and having the challenge of creating a product that is completely focused on fit, design, details, fabric, and then having to portray that message to the customer. And it was a challenge for us, but it worked really, really well. It's gone incredibly well, and we've introduced more colours into the range, and we're planning expanding the crafted line. So there's huge joy for us in having sort of that challenge or pushing the boundaries for us. And it sounds simple, like creating a plain t-shirt, but for a brand that's relied on graphics for so many years, it was a different feat for us.
I think that's it. It was not only to add a sort of different element to the brand, like George said, we're so known for big graphics and that is a core part of P&Co's DNA, but for us it was, how can we flip that on its head again and really be known for the quality of the goods,
not just
the piece that goes on it. It's, everything that we make is quality, whether that be a jacket or a jean or a trouser, whatever it might be. But I think t-shirts being the main sort of cornerstone of the brand, we were like, let's show people how right and how well we can do this product.
Yeah,
but they're in a great place now. We've now got an offering of 9 colours for those, so we've got a sort of a staple run of 4, I think, and then we've got seasonal colours that fit throughout the year, which is amazing to see that growth in that category.
What I'd like to know as well, though, so those are some of the joy you are feeling as the momentum is building behind the brands and ranges are launched and things. Tell us what it feels like to see your product out there in popular culture. We mentioned in our intro, but there's P&Co product now starting to permeate onto the backs of famous celebrities. Sam Fender was wearing your bowling shirt this summer at Wembley on his main tour. Surely you get those individual highs as well. How does that feel when you kind of see celebrities like that out there wearing your product?
It's a huge buzz, isn't it?
It is. It's undeniably cool. I think we've obviously got a WhatsApp group with the guys at work, and whether that being someone saying on the morning, they've seen a guy at the train station or a girl wearing this at a festival, people are seeing the brand more regularly these days, which is awesome to see. But say to have someone wearing it to, 100,000 people at Wembley on the headline tour, I mean, that's insane, isn't it? It's, that big graphic on someone's back, like a Sam Fender, is, it's invaluable to us at the moment. It's great.
Yeah, but we still get a huge buzz off just seeing anybody wearing P&Co. Like, there'll be times we're walking through town and we spot a denim jacket from 4 years ago and the only detail on it is a P&Co button, but you can spot it because we know it so well. We spent so long creating it. So yeah, it's a huge buzz anytime we see a P&Co out there in the wild.
Yeah, quite a special feeling, I can imagine. We've touched on it again a few times already, but you've got this fantastic loyal following online, haven't you? There's a huge army of P&Co fans, international, you know, across the pond in the States and Europe and beyond. That is the envy of a lot of aspiring fashion brands who look up to P&Co. Can you give us some insight as to how you've won those customers? Yeah, what's got into some of the disciplines behind the scenes in order to kind of create that following?
I think with us being really consistent with product and who we're marketing towards, I think for us it's always been about knowing the customer and making sure that we're providing products, not only just products, but you know, how we market to them, how we speak to them, events we do, and to create that sort of community online. You know, that's how we've kind of done things, just by getting product and everything right, the way we communicate to those customers.
I think timing as well.
We
were on the Instagram boom at the very early days when it first sort of kicked off, and there were certain trends that did really well in the early days of that, and I think one of them for us was sort of beard, tattoos, bikes, and that saw us grow quite a bit on Instagram really quickly. But then, like Lee said, it was through that consistency of who we're marketing to, who we're creating content for, products for, and pushing it out on those channels that I think maintain that steady growth for us.
Yeah, consistency of message is so important, isn't it? And I think you've been in business now 10 years plus, haven't you? And it's keeping that consistency, that message going that long, that is, it really sets brands apart, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And keeping up with algorithms.
Yeah.
So following on from that, I know there's no magic bullet, but are there any top tips or even lessons that you could share with aspiring retailers, or not even aspiring retailers, but established retailers? What are those secret ingredients that you've learned that you could share?
I think always a key word for us is passion. You've got to be passionate about what you're doing. I mean, me and Joel are always cooking up ideas for other brands left, right and centre, and we're like, what else are we passionate about that we can, you know, turn our hand to something else? But I think that would be my main bit of advice for someone. Start with what you're potentially A, good at, and what you really enjoy, because then those kind of things will, you know, come a bit more naturally to you, and will then obviously come across more authentic to your end customer as well.
Yeah, and find your unique DNA, what sets you apart from other people, and then make sure that flows through everything you do, from product, content, marketing, everything. I think that's really important. And it's easy to lose sight of that sometimes when you're trying to broaden or grow, or you want to try new things that you're into. But as long as it somehow always connects back to that DNA that you've spent time creating, it should work, because that's what your community is invested in from the beginning.
And is there any lessons you've learned along the way that you'd advise people not to do? What's gone? I mean, we're talking about joy, so we shouldn't really be talking about misery. But is there anything that hasn't gone well and you've learned from?
Yeah, loads of things, I'm sure.
Yeah. I think that's the thing with most people, isn't it? I think you do have your ups and downs and you do learn from them. I think one thing for us was, I'd say you've got to stay true to your core customer. I think you can, you know, diversify and try new categories and things like that, but it does kind of have to complement your main customer as well, to some extent. Yeah. Anyway, I think if you diversify too far, you can run the risk of alienating that core customer and core, you know, community base that you've built over so many years. You know, one wrong product or one wrong drop can, you know, quickly turn the tides on those people. So yeah,
I'd say look after the stock portfolio as well. Definitely don't neglect things that aren't working. You might have 10 stars at the top that are doing amazing, but you don't want to forget about those 5 at the bottom that aren't doing so well, and make sure you have a plan for those, or that you're giving them visibility and stuff. I think it's easy to be excited about the products that you're excited about and that the community is naturally excited about, but you've got to remember there's a full, you know, sort of portfolio of things that you've invested in and you've put time into that you need to realise as well.
Lee, picking up on what you said, so have you had a collection that's not gone well, and what have you done to almost combat that?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I think it. You know, you will always have misses. I think that is what happens with retail. I don't think anyone has 100% success rate with product. I think it does happen. I think we had a few sort of slight misses with some product last autumn, winter, George, is that right?
Yeah, I'd say elements of last year, definitely.
I think, you know, we interpreted data in a way that made sense to us, and we'd kind of changed a bit of photography style and direction to be a bit more minimal, which was great, and it had its place within the brand. But then I think we kind of almost hedged our bets with that kind of direction. It all sort of, without realising it, it flooded the brand too much, whereas it should have stayed just a sort of section. And so I think we did lose a bit of kind of core customer with that kind of range. But I think we've kind of spun that back on its head this year, and we've got back to really what we're good at and our DNA. You know, anyone can make the kind of pieces that we, you know, brands are putting out, but I think our DNA is what really sets it apart, and we've really focused on getting back to that.
Yeah. I think we like Lou said, we broadened some product and minimized some things to hopefully appeal to a wider audience, but and which was fine, and it worked incredibly well in the autumn winter of 2020. And then the following autumn winter we went one further with it and broadened the marketing and broadened the content, and that's what really did dilute down that range. So I think at its core, the product was still, for the most part, really right, but we just weren't really connecting as well with our customer. So it goes back to what we're saying about keep that core customer in mind. Make sure that everything you do has that unique DNA, and don't lose it, because, yeah, it only takes 50% of what you're doing to be wrong for, you know, a lot more to struggle.
Yeah, and I guess learning from those mistakes, but identifying them quickly is so key in retail. The shelf life of anything moves so quickly, and the seasons come and go. So how quickly did you identify those mistakes? What sort of things were you looking at to kind of judge the performance of how things were going? Is it purely sales? You just constantly wired in? Are you taking in a broader view of other metrics to kind of judge how we managed to
pick up on it really quickly, to be fair, but really quickly is still somewhat too late, because you're invested, you've got the range is, you know, stocked on the shelves and it's there to be sold. So we managed to pick it up really fast and put the wheels in motion to turn things around in terms of what we had coming out the following season needed tweaking. But I think what we really started to see was where maybe some of our content was a little bit more toned down than it was previously. We started to get imagery through that felt more on brand, that felt more, you know, P&Co. And we, as we seeded that back in with products that, you know, I'd say weren't really working at the time, we immediately saw the sales pick up on those individual products. And it was very pinpoint. This product got a new image on this date, and all of a sudden that picked up. And then you could very quickly realize that when you put those two sort of e-com images next to each other, you can see exactly why it didn't work. And as soon as we figured that out, we just put everything in motion to change it as quickly as possible and get back on track.
That's really interesting then. So just the single switch of an image, the same product, but shot differently, had that sort of impact.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, different model, different backdrop, but I think we'd sort of gone to, you know, very traditional e-com style white backdrop. So it was, there was less of that lifestyle and brand DNA flowing through the imagery. And then when we got images back elsewhere that were fully P&Co views, it worked straight away. And we saw products that we were scratching our heads about why isn't that selling as well as we thought it would. And then the image changed, and then it sold even better than we initially thought it would. And it was as simple as that. And so we had to just change that quickly and also get some product back on track as well and tweak the following spring, summer.
And the added benefit of being something completely in your control to fix instantly. So not necessarily something that you've got to go send back to the factory and come back. You can make those corrections the next day. And yeah, fantastic.
Exactly. Yeah. The team are great, rallied around and got everything done really quickly. And it worked amazingly. You know, spring, summer just gone has done really well for us. It's been a completely different sort of backdrop to autumn, winter prior.
And I suppose you can give a 180 example of a product not selling well, but trying to fix it, to several products, I imagine, this spring, summer, that's had the opposite of selling straight away and you having to move quite quickly on it to keep up with demand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. We've had a lot of that.
Yeah.
personal one for me, really, but what does autumn winter 22 look like, especially from women's wear?
So we've got some really exciting stuff actually coming up. We're doing our first workwear collection, which we're all really excited about in the office. We just had the fit samples back for our carpenter pant today. I had a call with Ross in the studio and they're looking really good. So it's really heritage inspired, but it's a new sort of another cornerstone of the website, a new long stay category for us. Obviously, we've got crafted now, but workwear is sort of here to stay with a view to, you know, be bought in every year and new colourways added and new lines and things like that. So it's a category we're really excited about.
And Lee, is workwear almost trending now? Is it something that you've always been passionate about? Like, why workwear?
It's always something that I've been really passionate about. I'm really into my heritage brands and my denim and workwear brands and stuff like that. So it's something that I've always envisioned in the brand. You know, when we were sort of, you know, drawing up the brand when we first started, I was like, the Pinterest board looked very much like what we're releasing. So 10 years down the line, to see it come to fruition is, you know, it's amazing to go and do the photo shoots and have all that content back to be able to create the adverts. We want to see it online now because it's something that we've wanted to create, say, now for 10 years. So
yeah,
a really exciting time.
I think alongside the heritage as well, the durability that comes with workwear fabrics just speaks to the quality that we want to put out and how long lasting we want P&Co goods to be, you know, so people can, we love the idea of people buying a jacket off us from a workwear range or a Wayfair jacket or whatever it is and still having that 10, 15, 20 years down the line. It's completely beat up, but it looks great and it's been repaired. So yeah, we look forward to that future and seeing those pieces come back to us.
So 10 years ago on your Pinterest board, was women's wear on there? And talk to me about how, if it was or wasn't, and how you moved the brand from being more male-focused into women's, because I obviously am a huge fan of the women's range. Has that always been the vision to do women's wear?
It started out with, we just saw a higher rates of women checking out, basically. And, you know, early on, you maybe make the assumption maybe they're buying for somebody else or whatever. And then very quickly, there's that many women checking out on the website that we just had to start creating women's wear. So I think initially, we just took the view to start shooting stuff on women a little bit more to show how it could be styled. And then eventually, we started to work on women's specific pieces. But it's tricky, women's wear, isn't it? It's a difficult category for us, difficult transition.
Yeah, I think it's came with its own learning curve. It's, you know, it's all new fits, new blocks, new patterns, which is obviously massively exciting, but it's something that, you know, does take a lot more getting right. I think we've developed, you know, women's specific pieces and women's cuts of T-shirts. But I think what we've found now is that it's more of a unisex vibe. So it's same sort of fabrics and styling, but then just mirrored through to women's wear. So same kind of utility, sort of boxy sort of shapes, but just sort of tailored a bit more for a woman.
Yeah, we've had some great women's wear pieces, like our fatigue pants absolutely fly every time. And we're working on new colours and patterns and things like that for that range. But it's, there's been a lot of trial and error, hasn't there, with women's wear pieces in particular. We found a few that have worked really well and we're looking to grow that now, definitely.
It'd be interesting to understand how you guys work together. So you've obviously been in business for 10 years. It's obviously lasted well. How do you guys how did you guys fall into the roles that you're in at the moment? And how do you, just give us a flavour of the working dynamic on a weekly basis.
Well, we sit next to each other, don't we? I mean, we don't hate each other that much.
We do.
So we sit next to each other. We do work quite closely. You know, we've worked together for a long time, but we'll still take lunch together every day and stuff. So it's good. The relationship's still
solid.
Definitely. Still solid. But I think Lee's creative director comes up with amazing ideas and we just like to bounce those off each other, don't we? I think we respect each other's roles really well.
I think that's it. We've both got very clear sort of, you know, responsibilities within the business in our own right. But I think we both understand what each other do. We're both product guys at heart, I think. Jules is very, you know, obviously more numbers orientated than I am. I'm more the sort of creative side, but I think we're both product people at heart, and it's, you know, putting two visions together that ultimately create a great product, and then Yeah. I think we just understand each other very well. I think having those set responsibilities and to understand and relate to what each other do, you know, you've got a clear sort of roots there.
Yeah. I think in the earlier days of P&Co, I was responsible for product development and, you know, working with the factories and making sort of realizing Lee's vision when it came to any individual products and making sure those details got passed over and, you know, the sample came back perfect. So we'd always worked really closely on that. And even down to picking which styles make it through to the collection and how many we buy, that's all something we, you know, it's stuff we still do together to this day and have done for years now, because I don't know, I think we're same but different. we complement each other quite well. We've got similar style but different styles, and that allows us to add a slightly different point of view to, you know, things like range building and stuff.
Yeah, I think 9 times out of 10 it's my handwriting that goes through to product, but collectively, you know, it's an outcome of both our DNA, not just, you know, the one or
just united by that passion for the product, basically, that you can always,
that's it.
Yeah.
I think that's it. I think that's what brought us back to the first point, you know, the joy in retail. It's almost like the joy in the creative process that comes first. The retail side will answer that if the product is right.
That's the quote. What does the future look like? My question is, what are the trends for the future? But it feels like you book a lot of trends. So what does the future look like in your eyes? What's the future for P&Co?
The more immediate future for us, we're still, you know, D2C, e-com purists at the moment, and there's still a lot of work to be done there, which is exciting. So we've got a loyalty program in development with Cake Agency, and that's exciting for us. We've wanted to do that for years. We've wanted to really give back to the community and reward people's loyalty and, you know, allow people to have maybe a deeper insight into, you know, range building and things like that, and give their feedback. So loyalty programs in development, and that's coming soon. But we're also working on an app as well. So we really want to give the most seamless P&Co experience possible. And I think nowadays, and with the way things are going, that's got to be an app for us. So we're working on that, and that should be out later this year. But I think later down the line, Lou, stores,
I think we'd be looking at, a decent sort of flagship store for us in London, and then rolling out to a few more stores, and like George said, wholesale accounts, so the brand is more accessible as well.
Yeah, just getting, you know, like we say, being where the customers are, you know, localising ourselves a little bit more to the States as well. We've got a great following, a great customer base in the States, and we really want to give them a better experience and faster shipping and easier returns and things like that. So we're looking at localising that experience, which is super exciting and unlocks a lot of potential for us as well. And then, yeah, retail and wholesale.
That is a really interesting concept from a loyalty point of view, to get the community to feedback on the products.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to say any more about that, or is that one that you want to keep under wraps?
It's something we've dabbled in on social media. We get people to give feedback. We like, you know, some ranges or some capsules we've even done sort of curated by you, where we allow the customers to pick what styles actually get made. But I think this will give us a bit of a deeper and better feedback loop with our sort of most loyal customers that, you know, are the P&Co evangelists that we just want to tap into their minds and find out what they think is missing from the range, or what they think about this piece and that piece. So giving them an opportunity to see that and maybe have an opportunity to, you know, jump on a call with them now and again would be awesome.
That's cool. And I'm also interested in America. So building communities in America, obviously there's a huge American following, and I know you guys have got collaborators in the US. Is there events planned, and is there going to be some invites coming our way? What's the plan for the US?
There's no
events. I think there will be, There will be. I think certain collections or drops or collaborations, you know, if we'll do something outside of the pond for a release, I think it'd be great to mirror something in the States if it's relevant. Yeah. But like you said, we're always collaborating with people outside of the States, and our community out there is ever growing, which is awesome, whether that be through, you know, content creators or other brands or individuals, you know, or just through to customers. It's a side of the world that we're really excited by. I think it's probably a misconception that a lot of people think the brand is American, because it does look that way. But we're just very inspired by it, and it's a big growth sort of sector for us at the moment.
Brilliant. I've got another one about collaboration and content creation. We get a lot of people who are very envious of the content that comes out of P&Co, and especially if you scroll through your guys' Instagram, the ladies' Instagram, all the main account, the content is awesome. And it's a really difficult question to answer, but how did you go about building and getting those collaborations in place to create such awesome content? Lee, I know a lot of it is driven by your vision, but there are boots on the ground, aren't there? There are guys that you work with, both guys and girls. So yeah, could you share a little bit about that?
I mean, say we shoot a lot ourselves, but I think with the guys that we work with, whether it be in America or across the world, I think we've really tried to sell them the vision of the brand. You know, obviously an independent brand to start with, especially more so a few years ago when we started out, it was really selling them the vision of the brand that this is going to be something like. I think we'd got exciting product, and I think people really wanted to shoot that. I think, you know, we were an exciting brand coming out of the UK, and it was a chance for them to, you know, work for the, you know, a cool UK exciting brand at the time. But yeah, I think we're still growing that community. We're still, you know, always finding new people to work with, whether that be photographers or different artists to work on, you know, art department graphics for us. I think that's ultimately what we're trying to create and build here. It is a, you know, a community of creators and adventurers, explorers, you know, people that can grow the brand with us, not just from a studio in Birmingham. It's help us grow it, you know, worldwide. I hope that answered the question.
No, it did. And when people, you know, ask, not necessarily just about you guys, but I obviously have a lot of experience in social media marketing. So it's like, how is it done? And I'm like, it's nothing but hard graft. It's relationship building. It's connecting with people. And I know you did a lot of that personally, Lee, in the early days. And it is true, genuine relationships that you can't buy what you've done. And it's something I know you've been running for 10 years, and that community has grown over that time. So it's really hard to describe to somebody like, how do I be P&Co? Because you can't. It's really authentic. It comes from within, and it's people that you, you know, aspire to and aspire to work with you. So it's absolutely amazing.
Thank you.
So 10 years in, guys, it sounds like you've only just got started.
Yeah, it feels that way. Right. We keep saying, you know, it's time to get going now and, you know, crank up a gear, which is always exciting. I think we're probably guilty of that. We're always moving the goalposts. You know, before we celebrated one thing, we're on to the next thing. But, you know, it makes it a really cool and fun environment to work in for me and Jord, you know.
Yeah.
Hopefully for the rest of the team as well. There's always something going on and progressing and building and growing this brand.
I think the we've tried our hand at a lot of things over the years. Like, we get people that join the team now and they're like, have you thought about doing this product? And we're like, yeah, we did it 7 years ago. Yeah, we did it 3 years ago. Like, we've done everything at some point. And that's just because we were really still finding our feet. We were trying, you know, loads of different avenues and products and, you know, styles and stuff. So it really feels like over the last couple of years, we've had to learn some hard lessons still, but we've really nailed down what the brand is and, you know, what we feel works for us and what we're really excited about and passionate about still as well. There's no compromise there. So, you know, that's why it feels like we're just getting going, really, because there's a lot of excitement between us and the rest of the team as well about what we can put out over the next few years.
And what would those lessons be for people that are looking to launch a brand today? I know it's a lot different to how the landscape's a lot different to how it was 10 years ago, but what would be those key lessons that you'd share with somebody looking to start?
It is very different. I think, like we said earlier, it's definitely your starting point's got to be with a passion or something that you really believe in. I think that is what will set you apart now, because there's tons of brands and businesses popping up left, right, centre, and you've got to really find what's unique about yours and put that out to your community and make sure it flows through everything you do. But I think, I don't know, some of the lessons we've learned, it sort of comes back to looking after the stock portfolio, making sure you're in the detail, you know what's working,
you're looking after the community. I think put out, if you're putting out product, put out a product that's worth more than the RRP you give it. You know, so you're never going to have a disappointing customer. They're always going to feel like they've got more value for money. And that's important to us as well. You know, we always want to be an accessible brand. We don't, you know, charge crazy prices for like the Crafted t-shirt, for instance, where you can go out there and buy one for anywhere between 80 and probably £300. You know, we've positioned that in a really nice place that we think still, you know, is very accessible for our community. And I think it's knowing your customer and making sure you can remain accessible and connect with them.
Yeah, I love that phrase, George. The always make sure you're creating a product that's got a higher RRP than the one you give it. So that's a really great way of always making sure you're putting great value out there for your customers. It's a good lesson. Definitely. For anyone to take.
I think that's true, because I think, you know, even when we order in product for ourselves into the studio, me and George will unpack a, you know, a fresh new white Crafted t-shirt, and we were like, these are so good for the money. Even we still get excited by them, which is awesome. So, you know, I think it is right. You're always over delivering on quality then, you know, whether that be the packaging experience you get and through to your, you know, your newspaper, the standard that you get with the orders. We've always tried to, you know, end-to-end experience has got to be the best. And I think that's why we're rooting back to the loyalty program and the app and things like that. That whole experience from, you know, placing an order and getting it on your doorstep and, you know, opening that package, it's something that we want people to feel excited about and can't wait to, you know, shop with us again.
It's absolutely great hearing you both talk about how much you look forward to receiving the product and that unboxing experience you have in the office. I mean, it would be good to just hear a little bit about how you've gone about forming that supply network that you have out there. Where do the products start? Where do they come from? How do you make sure they're kind of ethically sourced and you're meeting your kind of your green credentials, which I know you're quite passionate about as a brand as well. That's taken time as well to cultivate.
Yeah, it takes a lot of time. It's it is difficult, and you do have to kiss a few frogs sometimes and leave them behind. But yeah, it's taken a lot of years really to build the supply side of things, and we've been on a lot of trips to Turkey, to China. Both me and Lee have been to Turkey a few times to visit our factories and make sure that, you know, they're to the standard that we want them to be, the products to the standard. We've seen our products actually on the production line and made sure that it's coming out, you know, as it should do at times as well. And then we've got factories in China as well. That was something, it was really important to us to go out there and meet with these factories and see not only the showroom, but the factory, the operation, everything, and learn more about them. It's such a vast place, and especially, you know, in the manufacturing industry, that it's very, very difficult to understand who you're working with through email or through images online. So, you know, as quickly as possible, me and Ross went out there and we met so many different factories, a bunch we don't work with for obvious reasons. They didn't live up to it, and a few that we still do now and have done for a few years, because we've got a great relationship and they've got great standards, great quality. So yeah, it's incredibly important to us, but it does take a really long time. A lot of searching online, word of mouth, finding factories through other people. We've had factories come through from people that we've employed into sort of the product development team. So recently Maddie joined us, and she had some factories in her sort of black book that she'd worked with, and she knew how they worked and their sustainable efforts and ethical efforts and stuff. So, and that really helps. It cuts out a lot of time and, you know, traveling there as well. But yeah, that's probably one of the more difficult things, especially as you start to expand into other categories. Your first hurdle is finding who you work with. And there's a lot of things to answer there. Are they the right partner? Will they get the quality? Is the price right? Are they, you know, ethical, sustainable? What can they do for us? And it takes a while.
Yeah, so all parts of the link are carefully nurtured by you both and have been cultivated over a decade, basically, haven't you?
Yeah, we set out, you know, printing on blank t-shirts that we, you know, we sort of buy off the shelf t-shirts, your Continental, Stanley and Stella's, what are the other ones, Gildens, you know, things like that. In the very early days, and you're printing them here in the UK and making leather goods here in the UK and bags, and it's much easier to keep control in those times, but it's incredibly, incredibly expensive. And like we say, we wanted to remain accessible. Most brands that do manufacture out of the UK, they do have to put on, you know, considerably higher RRP, you know, onto things like t-shirts and jersey and stuff. So I think transitioning and scaling the business to creating our own t-shirts, which was incredibly important to us. I think there was a time where I was kind of like, guys, I think our packaging's better than our t-shirts now, because we make this completely bespoke, but we, you know, the t-shirt's still off the shelf, and it sort of just clicked for us. We needed to go out and find the right partner and create it. And it was a big leap initially, but it's definitely paid off, and you know, we've got some great partners that we work with now on all categories, really.
So your product's been on Sam Fender, it's been on the Stereophonics, it's been on Cillian Murphy. Have you got a celebrity you're targeting? And go, if we get our product on that celebrity, we've made it. Is there one you've got in your view that you just think, okay, that's it?
I mean, there's a few actors that I think you could probably name drop. I'd love to see Ryan Reynolds in a jacket. I've seen him wear sort of similar things to us, and I'm like, damn it, that should have been a P&Co jacket. We've got one very similar, should have been ours. Yeah. You know, you David Beckham's of the world. There's that photo that does the round on Pinterest every now and then of Brad Pitt on an old school Harley, like bombing through the woods. And I'm like, he'd look great in our stuff as well. There's too many to name, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know the Ryan Reynolds jacket, the exact one you're talking about. I agree.
Yeah.
Great. Well, when we go over to America, we'll just stop by.
We'll just drop him one off.
We go to America. Great. Thank you so much, guys. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. And yeah, thank you so much for sharing with us how you find the joy in retail. Thank you very much. Take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Joy of Retail from Cake Agency, the e-commerce agency founded by retailers for retailers. We're passionate about retail, passionate about e-commerce, and passionate about helping others feel the joy that comes from both when you get it right. When you get us talking, it's hard to get us to stop. So we want to bring more of these stories to you in the weeks ahead. We work with Bad Monday, P&Co, 304 Clothing, and many more. And we'd love to work with you. You can find out more about us and the clients we work alongside at cake.agency. If you've enjoyed this podcast, we'd love you to follow it in your podcast app so that you never miss an episode. And if you'd like to feature as a guest, it would be great to hear from you. Please email hello@cake.agency.